seed element, not the cottonseed policy, but the cottonseed element. Turn it over to you.
Thank you. Yeah, we're going to talk about private risk management topics related to whole cottonseed, and I'll acknowledge the person that did all the work, the first author here, Wes Rugman, is a recent master's graduate, and my other co-authors are, like me, extension commodity specialists or cooperative specialists there in College Station. So this is really just sort of an exploration that we started because we were interested. That's what happens when a student and another professor wander into your office during coffee break and we start kicking around ideas, things we've never worked on. I get one call a year about cottonseeds when I guess somebody from CI calls and I pretend to dig up some info and know something, but we've never really studied it. One of the reasons is because I'm sort of a futures hedging focused person and cottonseed doesn't have that, and that's the point of this study. So just in an effort to learn more, we took on this effort. So anyway, cottonseed's an important joint product of cotton, as you all know, and it's got a number of different uses. Just in beginning to gather information about it, the two main sources, there's a National Trade Association, I forget what its name is, but they have some national trends, national utilization data. We found that. And then Cotton Incorporated tracks utilization and other things related to cottonseed, but that was about it. We couldn't find any state-level info, so that's another motivation for this study. And it began, since we concluded, well, gee, we don't know very much about it, why don't we, you know, do a survey? Here's where the cotton is, so here's where the cottonseed is, and this is the basis for a survey that I'm going to tell you about in just a second, which we sort of stratified, splitting the state in half. Just by the way, there's an oil mill in Lubbock, a cooperative oil mill. I think the ADM oil mill is in Lubbock too, maybe? There's an ADM oil mill up there, and then there's a cooperative oil mill in Harlingen down in the River End Valley. And obviously the feeding industry is concentrated up there. So we decided to, through the help of the Texas Cotton Ginners, just do a simple exploration. So we developed a postcard-sized little survey, and after IRB decided that we weren't going to kill anybody by sending this out, we did. I'll blame IRB. It was sort of a bad time of the year. We sent it out in October. The South Texas gins were rip-roaring going, so we imposed on a number of folks down in that part of the world. But we were basically just asking them, you know, a little bit of descriptive information, where they were and whether they were co-op or independent. I think roughly they're split 50-50 in the state. How much they sold and the seasonality of when they sell cottonseed, and then try to get some impressions from them about is price risk a problem? Do you do anything about it? That sort of thing. So we sent that out. We got about a 23% response rate, and here are some of the results, which are a little hard to read. This is sales, the destination of their sales, so that you know, big chunks of it go to either on this side, it's in South Texas, so it's the oil mill, the red is the oil mill, the cooperative oil mill, Valco, and on the right, almost 45% is to Pico. And then you got the ADM oil mills, and up in this part of the world particularly, you got feedlots, dairies, and there's a number of independent brokers that are just middlemen. They either buy it, put it in storage, and sell it to those primary destinations, the mills or the feedlots, that sort of thing. So that's where it goes. This is when it goes. Coincides with harvest time. There is storage. My understanding is all of the independent gins have storage. Many of the cooperative gins did not. So there's some storage, but you know, a whole lot of it gets sold as it comes in. They can only hold so much. So South Texas starts harvesting in July, and so you can just kind of see the progression of harvesting in Texas. And as you might imagine, there's a seasonality of prices that goes along with that. And these were some of the responses they gave us. Now, I can't account for we only had a 23% response rate, so a whole bunch of people didn't respond at all. Does that mean that they didn't think it was a problem at all and they weren't going to fool with it? I don't know. A number of people that did respond didn't put anything in this open-ended comment section. Does that mean something about whether it's a problem or not? I don't know. I have to live with that. But the vast majority of the people that did say something said something like this. Yeah, it's important. Some gave more detail than others, but had a general indication that price risk was something that they would like to do something about, you know, if they could, and if it didn't cost too much. So it gave us a little bit of motivation to just kind of keep looking. So the next phase of the, the next phase was to see what other folks have done, and there hadn't been much work done on hedging whole cottonseed. I just tell that right now. It's pretty much all right there. What we leaned a lot on was this study by Steve Turner and co-authors here. They were looking at cross-hedging cottonseed meal, and we're looking at the whole product. But we followed their methodology to a large extent. So when you're talking about cross-hedging, you're talking about taking a position in an alternative market because there isn't a current cottonseed futures market to hedge with. So we have to look at other commodities that are close enough. You know, there's a lot of elements to cottonseed. There's protein, there's fat, and other stuff that makes up different kinds of feedstuffs, different kinds of crops. So you might immediately think of soybeans, soybean meal, and those turn out to be the best ones. But we looked at canola, and we looked at corn, what was a suggestion. There were some rules of thumb that had mentioned that some of those Jenners indicated in their when we asked them, well, what do you do about price risk management? A couple of them actually said, well, you know, at least there's been some thought, if not some practice, of using corn futures or using soybean futures or using some combination of corn and soybean futures to approximate the qualities and therefore the price of whole cottonseed. So there's been a little thought in this area before. It hadn't been documented in the academic literature, so it's probably just in somebody's file cabinet in some gin in West Texas. But it's the road that we're going down here. So, you know, questions we need to answer are, you know, what commodities are the best and how many futures contracts do we need to hedge a certain quantity of cottonseed? So those are the things that we're proceeding to answer with our study. So we looked at, as I mentioned, a number of things. The black line is soybeans. The blue line is soybean meal. Soybean oil futures. Corn is the yellow one. And canola, which is traded in Winnipeg, I think, is the red line there. And, you know, you can see, going back over this study period, which goes back to 2007, there's, you know, they track each other fairly well. There's going to be obvious, you know, other forces involved in those futures prices that are going to deviate. Now, what this is, the cash price series is the bright red. And what that is West Texas cash weekly cash prices. We got that, I think, from Informa Economics. So that we bought that cash series. We got the rest of that data from some futures databases that we have. We converted those for those other futures contract prices. We had to convert them to a weekly price. So that's what you're looking at there. Our weekly prices, everything all lined up. And the correlations, as you can see, are across the bottom. And they're not. Some of them are pretty uncorrelated. Cotton being the least correlated, that's curious. And the others are not super great, but the ones that stand out are just under 70% are the soybean and the soybean meal. So we kind of focused a little more closely on them. Another thing we looked at that's an issue in this process and an issue in previous research is, well, what's the basis risk? Because what are the deviations of the pathway of our cash price series and these future series? And so the basis is calculated in the 5th line there where it says mean. That's the difference. And there's some pretty wide differences there. And there's you can see the standard deviation reflecting the variance of the basis between cash cottonseed prices and these various futures contracts. And fortunately for us, the one that has pretty much the least basis risk are soybeans and soybean meal, which makes them, again, good candidates. Besides the correlation, it makes them very good candidates I guess it's pretty much the same thing, but it makes them good candidates for exploring for cross-hedging. So here they are just by themselves. Soybean futures on a weekly basis, soybean meal on a weekly basis. This is all dollars per ton compared to cottonseed cash prices, weekly cottonseed cash prices. So you put that up there and you can still think, okay, well, you know, this is a side note, but, you know, what might explain some of the differences? This is some of the risk if you're going to use a hedging strategy. You know, there's going to be periods of time when they don't move together, and that might be directed by, you know, global soybean fundamentals. Something might happen and that affects trade. Something might happen that
affects the world crop, something going on in South America. Soybean futures go way up or way down, and cash futures, cash cottonseed prices in West Texas are not moving at all. You face that kind of risk. That's the source of the basis risk. Is something big, global, fundamental, or something speculative in the CBOT that moves those futures contracts and does not affect West Texas cash prices? You got to worry about that sort of thing happening. But here's the series. One thing you have to do is figure out the number of contracts of futures contracts you have to sell to hedge a certain quantity of West Texas cotton seed. So the way you do that is just do a simple regression of the West Texas price on the soybean. This is soybean meal is an example, and the beta coefficient there gives you essentially the hedge ratio. It's telling you the number of contracts that you need to buy. And if you put that beta coefficient, replace that H star, do that little calculation, it'll tell you the number of contracts you need to buy, in this case of soybean meal, to hedge a certain quantity of, to hedge a ton of cottonseed. So we did that for soybean meal, we did that for soybeans. There are the betas, the slope parameter there. So we used those in the calculation and figured out how many things we need to hedge. So we know how many to hedge a ton of cottonseed. We know how many contracts we need to sell. And the next question is, how do you do this hedge? You know, when do you take a position? And so we kicked around a number of different alternatives, and we boiled it down just by trial and error to these two. The first one, you know, think about it. You're hedging. You're worried about all that selling of cottonseed. You're the gin. You're going to sell all this cottonseed in October, November, December, January. You're worried about that period. So how are you going to protect yourself from low prices during that time? That's the question that this is addressing. And so one way you could do it is take a period of time. You just basically say, all right, you got a crop coming. You know it's coming. You're worried about it in the fall. So just back up 4 months and sell the appropriate number of soybean or soybean meal futures contracts. Back up 4 months, you know, do it 4 months early over that whole fall period. So you could hedge any time, from about May, June, July, and August to cover cottonseed that you're going to be selling 4 months later in the fall months. So that's one approach that we took, and we used historical data doing that, going in as if we had sold those soybean or soybean meal futures at those dates in the summer to hedge incoming supplies that we'd be selling later in the fall. The second scenario is similar, but simpler. It's simply you put your hedges on, you sell those soybean or soybean meal futures in July, during the first week of July, and you lift them whenever you're selling stuff in October, November, December. So you just put it on in July and sell it in the fall at the same time. If you do that, if you work through all those examples historically, again, sometimes you make money on the hedges, sometimes you lose money on the hedges. And then we calculated effective net prices, basically the gain or the loss plus the price that you sold the cottonseed for to come up with an effective net price for the hedging strategy. And basically, taking either one of those approaches tended to pay off. A little summary information here, but the hedges tended to do better on average than just selling the cash cottonseed on average, and that occurred because two-thirds of the time the hedged price, the effective net price, hedging with whole cottonseed or soybeans or hedging with soybean meal, two-thirds of the time that net price, that hedge price was higher, so you were better off taking the hedging strategy two-thirds of the time, one-third of the time you were not. And it shows, you know, by how much you gained or by how much you lost is in there. And, you know, those losses aren't trivial, so part of the results that I would offer to the Jenners and the Texas Cotton Industry is, you know, this isn't a strategy to, get rich quick or anything. This is hedging. This is insurance. You're trying to buffer yourself. The implication that the hedging strategies tend to pay off a lot suggests to me that there's enough seasonality to consider doing this, and it certainly needs to be refined. But it certainly caught our attention that it did pay off quite a bit of the time. And this summarizes it a little bit better. This is the results, again, the effective net price, dollars per ton over here. If you had just done the cash selling the cottonseed, you can see what your price would be in general. Again, on average, either the naive selling the futures in July and buying them back later in the fall when you're selling the cottonseed, on any given date there during that selling season, those are your resulting net prices, and on average, they're higher. And the same thing over here, the one where you do it just 4 months before, lift those hedges 4 months later, you generally work out better. Again, on average, there were times when you won and times when you lost. But our message to the industry would be: number one, we need to work on this more. But I think there's certainly it's caught our attention. There's some potential positive benefit here that we could work out a systematic strategy that somebody could follow. Again, not trying to get rich, not trying to make money out of the market, because you can't. I can't predict right now whether there'll be a divergence between the soybean futures prices and the West Texas prices. You could lose money doing something like this. I guess the key issue would be to try to identify those times or do strategies that protect a gen from being wiped out by some black swan event, even if they were just doing correct, hedging as from an insurance standpoint. We got to worry about those rare catastrophic events using this kind of a strategy. So this is my last slide. The future things we're interested in doing is kind of the flip side of this would be, well, what if you didn't take positions before the cottonseed came in? What if you went ahead and just sold it and then took long positions, either bought futures or bought call options? That's a viable alternative to what I've been showing you, and we're in the process of exploring that too. And the other is just using options, either in the kind of the pre-harvest approach to using options or the buying call options for the long hedge, either one of those. So I'd be happy to entertain questions, or better yet, get some suggestions on how we might be able to improve this. Yeah?
My bid with some of the dairy guys that they've been paying using the soybean meal for a long time on their capacity to pay
you. Okay. All right, good. There was somebody alluded to the fact that somebody had given some thought to it. I didn't realize the dairy people had been doing it. So, all right, we shall. Okay, all right, thank you.
Next. Your price was on the cottonseed was always on the seed, right?
Yes. Yes.
There seems to be a distinct difference between
the
wholesale market and then
the warehouse
price.
The components, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm curious if you compare the hedge that the soybean, let's say, with the product coming out of the oil.
Out of the mill. I mean, that could be done too.
And might be a much
more precise, lining up those pieces with meal futures. And that I would think that'd be useful work too, that the mill might be interested in, for sure. Or the buyers. Well, if another student wanders into my office, that's when these things happen.
What is it? I remember when the Minneapolis Grain Exchange, came out with about 20 years ago, I guess. And everyone thought was that there was a 70% correlation between soybean futures and oil.
We got 67 or something like that. So we could sort of confirm that.
Did you use other scenarios about other times of year to put
this in? Yeah, we did. What led to the July naive strategy was that we did a January through, we did a every month, and July seemed to be the best one. So we could have kept him exploring all kinds of strategies, but he did want to graduate, so. Some reason they always want to.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks very much.
Thank you.